He was surprised to find how ruinous the interior of the house was. Cobwebs, worm-eaten beams, crumbling plaster. But the mute crone resolutely wound him on the reel of her lantern down endless corridors, up winding staircases, through the galleries where the painted eyes of family portraits briefly flickered as he passed, eyes that belonged, he noticed, to faces, one and all, of a quite memorable beastliness. At last, she paused and, behind the door where they'd halted, he heard a faint, metallic twang, as of, perhaps, a chord struck on a harpsichord. And then, wonderfully, the liquid cascade of the song of a lark bringing to him in the heart, had he but known it, of Juliet's tomb, all the freshness of morning. The crone rapped with her knuckles on the panels, the most seductively caressing voice he had ever heard in his life softly called out, in heavily accented French, the adopted language of the Roman aristocracy, entrez. First of all, he saw only a shape imbued with a faint luminosity, since it caught and reflected in its yellowed surfaces what little light there was in the ill-lit room. This shape resolved itself into that of all things, a hoop-skirted dress of white satin draped here and there with lace, a dress 50 or 60 years out of fashion, but once obviously intended for a wedding. And then he saw the girl who wore the dress, a girl with the fragility of the skeleton of a moth, so thin, so frail, that her dress seemed to him to hang suspended, as if untenanted in the dank air, a fabulous lending, a self-articulated garment, in which she lived like a ghost in a machine. All the light in the room came from a low-burning lamp with a thick greenish shade on a distant mantelpiece. The crone who accompanied him shielded her lantern with her hand, as if to protect her mistress from too suddenly seeing, or their guest from too suddenly seeing her. So that it was little by little, as his eyes grew accustomed to the half-dark, that he saw how beautiful and how very young the bedizened scarecrow was, and he thought of a child dressing up in her mother's clothes, perhaps a child putting on the clothes of a dead mother in order to bring her, however briefly, to life again. The Countess stood behind a low table, beside a pretty, silly, gilt and wire bird cage, hands outstretched in a distracted attitude that was almost one of flight. She looked as startled by their entry as if she had not requested it. With her stark white face, her lovely death's head surrounded by long dark hair that fell down as straight as if it were soaking wet, she looked like a shipwrecked bride. Her huge dark eyes almost broke his heart with their waif-like, lost look. Yet he was disturbed, almost repelled, by her extraordinarily fleshy mouth, a mouth with wide, full, prominent lips of a vibrant purplish crimson, a morbid mouth, even, but he put the thought away from him immediately, a whore's mouth. She shivered all the time, a starveling chill, a malarial agitation of the bones. He thought she must be only 16 or 17 years old, no more, with the hectic, unhealthy beauty of a consumptive. She was the chatelaine of all this decay,